Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Realtor Association v. Calumet City. Mr. Murphy.
May it please the court and opposing counsel, John Murphy for Calumet City. Because this case is before the court on preliminary injunction and because it involves the facial constitutional challenge to a law, I'd like to spend a couple of moments making sure we all understand how the law works. Calumet City.
Well, before you do that, I have a threshold question. I worry about your standing, the realtor's standing, to challenge, because this is a law aimed at homeowners who want to sell their property, and you supply a service to homeowners, and I think you're kind of remote.
Well, I'm the city, so I agree.
Pardon?
I'm the city, so I agree.
I'm sorry. That backwards. But you didn't raise this standing issue, did you?
Yes, we did, Your Honor. We raised it under the Hunt, the Washington Apple case.
Well, but
and also the associational issue.
Well, but there are two issues. One is an association representing its members. That's one issue. That's the one you discussed. But the one that concerns me is remoteness. So suppose that the plaintiffs in this case were not real estate agents, but they're people who paint for sale signs. Now, they're injured by anything that reduces, you know, the amount of selling of property, but they wouldn't be permitted to sue. Their injury would be considered too remote. So my question is whether that's a problem here also. But Judge Shader had like a sentence dismissing this concern. I wondered whether this is something you had argued in the district court, or you have a thought on.
Yes, Your Honor, it is something we argued below, and in our brief, it is what I call the kind of the doubly derivative remoteness issue. The broker's injury is based on a bundle of variables in terms of the operation of the ordinance. Will there be an inspection? What will the inspection reveal? Will the homeowner make the changes, or will the homeowner bargain with the buyer to make those changes? So the impact of the ordinance on somebody who derives their income as a commission from the ultimate sale, it seems to the city, is indeed extremely remote, and more fundamentally, perhaps, lends itself only to an as-applied challenge because of the many variables which we discuss in our briefs.
Well, there's even a more fundamental problem than that. The only interest of the broker is in the commission, right? And there is no right to a certain level of commissions. That's not a legally protected interest.
I would agree, Your Honor, and that also makes the broker's claim in this case on a facial challenge even more remote, and it is a matter that we repeatedly raised with Judge Shader.
Homeowners sued, to your knowledge?
Subsequent to the filing of the brief, there is a homeowner who has claimed that she lost her sale because of the application of the ordinance.
She'd at least have standing, you can see right away.
She would have standing because we could then examine what the city did, why the city did it. Did the city have defense?
Has she sued?
She has sent us a demand letter as part of this proceeding, and so far we haven't
exceeded. As part of this proceeding or part of her own problem?
Judge Shader issued an order in this case without this homeowner being present, saying that based on affidavits submitted by the brokers, this homeowner was entitled to compensation. In our view, an extraordinary order without the plaintiff being present in the case. That's a second problem we're dealing with. But for purposes, I think, of a facial challenge to this ordinance, Judge Bauer, that hits it right on the head. If this homeowner says, my sale was frustrated because the city horsed me around, they said my granny flat is illegal and it's been there for 50 years, she's got a lawsuit. Yeah. I don't think that lawsuit's in this building. I think it's at the Daly Center.
Well, I agree with that, too.
And
but just in the academic sense, why wouldn't a title company have a beef against you? They wouldn't be able to issue policies on the new sales.
Well, the title might have, but that's a contractual matter, certainly, which neither of which belongs in this building. The one point I want to make on the merits in terms of the
You can go back to what you wanted to say. Yeah.
On the merits is something that we raised in the reply brief. The realtors have said that the city inspectors can say that's a illegal granny flat, or you've got all these violations and we're not issuing any sort of permit. Contrary to what the brokers have contended, Illinois law specifically allows for Zoning Board of Appeals. That's a speedy administrative remedy where all the homeowner has to do is pay the fee and there's an administrative hearing. It then goes to the Illinois courts on administrative review. So from a federal due process sense, the Illinois structure plainly allows for due process in the context of this. And then,
so if the inspector makes a mistake, then the homeowner has redress under Illinois law, can go to the Board of Zoning Appeals?
Yes. On the
regardless of the nature of the mistake, even if it's not a mistake as to whether the use is a legal nonconforming, you know, some other kind of building code violation mistake.
If the building inspector said that's an illegal granny flat, or if the building inspector says your wiring is all shot to hell and you need to repair this, those are administrative building code terminations. The Illinois Municipal Code.
What is the purpose of this inspection? Is it simply to protect the new buyer, or is it to enforce the city's code, or what?
Both. In terms
why do they have an interest in protecting the buyer in the abstract?
Well, because the buyer is a future taxpayer.
I would cover everybody in the village, too. You could wander through and in and out.
Well, it is. And I think that a municipality has a strong institutional interest in maintaining its housing stock, particularly when you
but
have...
But interfering with the right of people to sell their property strikes me as being kind of an odd way of approaching the problem.
Well, I guess
they have a right to insist that the present owner can keep his house up to code, no question about it.
The ordinance operates against the seller of property, Your Honor.
Yes, I know.
But
why pick out the seller? Why not protect the people? Why not protect the seller, too? Why not say you had enough to snuff yourself?
Well, I guess two reasons. Number one...
Because you can collect the fee for doing this one, you can't the first one.
The city collects a fee anyway on any transfer.
Oh, yeah.
It's a transfer tax.
I understand that, but that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
You get
an extra fee for this one, don't you?
This aspect, it's a fairly nominal fee.
Well, it's a fee, though.
It is a fee.
Yeah. But if the city decides to inspect a house in the abstract, they can't charge the owner a fee for doing the inspection, can they?
If the city offers to and the owner consents, the city can charge a fee. But
if you voluntarily give people money, it's no problem at all. But I'm suggesting if the city decided they want to look at my house, just the abstract, and they came in and looked, they couldn't charge me a fee for that, could they?
No, and I don't believe this ordinance does that, Your Honor.
You mean if they don't find anything wrong, they don't charge a fee?
The ordinance is for people who are getting ready to sell their house.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm saying the reason you do it is not to protect the owner or the buyer, but to collect the fee.
It is to maintain the city's housing stock.
Well, they could do that without people buying and selling.
That is true, but that, as a federal constitutional matter, is a question, we believe, of legislative...
Yeah, but I wasn't asking in terms of the constitutional matter. I was asking in the abstract, what was the reason for the city being involved in this?
The reason for the city being involved in this, in the either the abstract or the practical, is that they want to make sure that the housing stock is maintained, that law violators are caught.
That sounds like a splendid thought. I'm not sure that's really what they want to do.
Well, there's certainly nothing in this record that would indicate anything other than the purpose of this law is to enforce building codes and to prevent zoning.
What's the purpose of doing it at the point of sale, though? I think that's what the questions are directed at.
The purpose of doing that at the point of...
What did you say about zoning? I'm sorry to interrupt the answer, but you said in to preserve zoning?
To prevent zoning violations.
But you do that without sale.
It is, at times, extremely difficult to enforce a zoning ordinance if somebody illegally converts a single-family home into a...
Why is it hard? It's done all the time.
Because we have to rely on other evidence, and people are very clever at converting homes.
Well, don't they have to pull a permit to build something?
They don't bother.
They don't bother. they try to obtain that second income out of the unit by converting it illegally. It happens.
So you're worried about conversion of to kind of boarding house type of setup. But let me ask you, you mentioned the remedy of going to the zoning board, but how long does that take? So someone wants to sell his house, has a contract for sale, and then there's the inspection, and he flunks the inspection. So, these contracts don't last forever. So how soon can he get a ruling?
The statute requires within 15 days that the zoning board has to convene. That's in the Illinois Zoning Chapter 65 ILCS 5/11-13, I believe it's 12. So it provides for a speedy...
But they may have to convene within 15 days, but how long... Is there a deadline on their issuing a decision?
There's no statutory deadline, Your Honor, but I can only speak from experience that these are not complicated matters. They're usually handled in one night, and it's kind of funny if you want to see a real-world illustration of it. And when I was doing my prep work this morning, brand-new case comes down from our Illinois appellate court dealing with Evanston, and it shows exactly what happens. It's a case called Taylor versus Zoning Board of Appeals of Evanston, dealing with a conversion. It shows how this happens in real world, which is at 2007 Westlaw 2404460, decided August 23rd. The other thing, Your Honor, in terms of fail-safe, for somebody who wants to sell the property, there's an escrow provision where the closing can occur and an amount of money to secure a potential violation is there, and the buyer has 180 days to do it, and then we place the burden on ourselves to go to court to...
You're into your rebuttal pretty severely. I think maybe you might have said it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Murphy. Mr. Stahl?
Good morning. My name is Philip Stahl. I represent the Plaintiff Association, and I'd like to start just by noting the context in which this comes up. This is an appeal from the entry of a preliminary injunction, but actually we're on the third version of the ordinance that was originally challenged. And at the threshold, Judge Shader thoroughly addressed the standing issue. And the members' standing is conceded by Cal City. Their objection to standing was that they had to have a member. But I'd like to address the standing point because I think we can straighten this out. And if we go to the issue of the for sale sign, it's illustrative, and it's virtually the same thing. All of the members of our association operate either through exclusive right to sell agreements in which they have the listing, but also the duty to operate as the agent of the seller to effectuate the closing. In the for sale sign context, of course, it's the seller's property that's being sold, but the real estate broker clearly has standing to challenge the ordinances that prohibit or restrict the use of for sale signs because it's part of the advertising, of the sale. Now, here, what happened...
Wait. You've lost me.
It is not at all clear to me, so tell me why it's so clear.
Well, in the Lindmark case, It was the real estate broker who brought the case. Lindmark Associates, the plaintiff in the Lindmark case in which the U.S. Supreme Court held that the for sale sign is protected by the First Amendment. In that case, the plaintiff was the real estate broker.
That was his sign, though, you're talking about.
On the sign. Now, in this case,
it was the real estate agent's sign that was in issue.
But it was the interest of the seller in selling and advertising his home.
If you have a regulation of real estate brokers, of course they can challenge that regulation. This is not a regulation of real estate brokers. This applies to people who want to sell their home without a broker. Right?
But let me just play it out, if you would indulge me. In the context of the way this comes up, it is the transfer of property that is being impeded here. There's an absolute deprivation of the transfer of property without any due process by Calumet City simply by refusing to issue the transfer stamp.
That hurts the person who owns the property. It doesn't hurt the people who provide services.
It eliminates
title companies, for example. Do you think title company could bring this suit?
I don't represent a title company. I haven't thought of it. But what I can say is that
I'm asking you a question. Do you think a title company could bring this suit?
I don't think so. But here's why the broker can. No closing, no commission. It's a direct...
That's true. Look, the title company. No closing, no title, no new title policy.
But not all transactions, the transactions don't even necessarily involve a title.
Of course, and they don't necessarily involve a broker either.
No, but we're only interested in the ones that do involve the broker.
The title company is only interested, if the title company brought suit, they would say, we're only interested in those sales in which the buyer would be buying a new title policy, and those sales are burdened, discouraged, deterred, and so on by this ordinance.
This was all completely and fully addressed by Judge Shader.
It was not fully addressed. He just talked, the papers I've seen, has one sentence on
well,
it. And anyway, whether he discussed it, you know, in 1,000 pages, we have to make an independent decision. Do you have standing?
Well, in the context in which this comes up, though, the only standing issue that was raised by Cal City...
Look, standing is jurisdictional, even this prudential standing. Or at least, you know, we can certainly raise it on our own initiative, even if it's not argued by the defendant, because it is very... And as he points out, if we had a real seller here, an owner... We would have a better sense of the, you know, factual dimensions of this.
I'd like to go to that, too. The factual dimensions of this, whether there's an appeal, how long it takes, all of that can and will be fully addressed, if it's germane to what the city's going to argue, before we get to a judgment on the merits. Here we're here on a preliminary injunction.
You still have to establish standing.
I understand the standing point, Your Honor. I'm just addressing all these other points. Mr. Murphy is complaining about the court entering an order for that provided compensation. That's not even here. But what I'm saying is, and I can go back to standing, but I'm saying here we're on a preliminary injunction, and city conceded that the injunction would not harm it and would not harm the public interest.
None of that matters if you can't establish a legally protected interest. And all you're interested in is in maintaining a certain level of commissions. That's not a legally protected interest, and the injury is far too remote to sustain standing.
I would say this is very similar to the situation in which the doctor who's going to perform the medical procedure, the abortion, has standing to challenge the abortion law.
He's a party to the transaction.
But the real estate broker is also a party to the transaction because he has the buyer.
He's a supplier of a service to the transacting parties, right? If a doctor has standing to complain about an abortion, that doesn't mean that the person who that the manufacturer of forceps used in abortions has standing to sue.
I agree, Your Honor, but and this was developed in the it's hardly in the record here at all. It's not in the record here at all. It wasn't developed, but there is an exclusive right to sell agreement. And then under the real estate contract, the broker becomes a party to the transaction. He has the exclusive right to sell under the agreement, and then he has a right to receive the commission, and he also has duties to the seller to effectuate the sale. And what happened? And all we're complaining about is the
hypothetical case. Suppose the manufacturer of the forceps has a contract with an abortion clinic to sell 10 forceps a week, and then the state bans abortions, and he may have a contractual remedy against the doctor, but he doesn't have standing to complain about the about the abortion law.
That is way more remote than this.
It seems identical to me. What you have is a service provider to transacting parties who has a contract with one of the transacting parties.
But his commission is dependent on the closing. There's no,
well,
in
the
absence of closing.
If you manufacture medical equipment for abortions, your business depends upon abortions being legal.
But this is a matter.
If it's illegal, your business is wiped out, right?
We're so far afield here. Forceps have many uses.
It's central to your right to maintain this.
No, but I'm saying that what I'm talking about and what was in the district court record and wasn't challenged by Cal City on this appeal is that the member, the individual member who is the listing agent and has the exclusive right to sell and the duty to effectuate the transaction, and the buyer's agent, the buyer's broker, both are unable to earn their commission because of this deprivation of the right to transfer in the closing. And we're not complaining about the inspections. We're complaining about the inability to close the transaction because Cal City won't allow it unless they decide they will permit it.
But
and all of this
counsel,
about
you still haven't addressed the fundamental point that you don't have a constitutional right to a certain level of commissions.
No, but
and the city's concession doesn't bind us, so you can forget about that line of argument.
In the Hunt case itself, the associational standing, in the Hunt case itself, if you go back there, North Carolina decided to make it virtually impossible or extremely difficult for Washington State apple growers to ship their product into the state of North Carolina. The plaintiff in the Hunt case challenging that North Carolina statute was the Washington Advertising Commission. It wasn't even a trade association acting on behalf of the member apple growers. And associational standing to act on behalf of the members and then the derivative standing of the member of the trade association to advance his own interest as well as those of the consumers.
You see, that's consumers. Not your problem. The problem isn't associational standing. I mean, suppose your clients were an association of termite inspectors and they had contracts with buyers to inspect homes being bought for termites. Would they be able to bring this suit?
They
have a contract with one of the transacting parties.
Well, I just like to, I mean, I don't know whether I don't know that there's more that I can say.
Okay, well, you can move on to something else.
Well,
that's
but
fine.
Let me just address this. It would be possible, and I'm sure that a homeowner could come up and sue, but the context of this is that the homeowner trying to sell the property wants to sell the property. And the length of time that can be involved in filing suit, trying to get an injunction, and then the sale either goes through or doesn't go through. If the sale goes through, then there's almost a de minimis amount of damage that could be claimed from the cost of the inspection. Otherwise, it's moot. If it doesn't go through, then Cal City will claim it's just a routine claim for damages and it should be in the process. So we really have the the practical impossibility, which is another element of standing that was addressed in the district court, which is whether or not it's
class action of Calumet City homeowners, because if the ordinance has the effects you attribute to it, that would reduce the value of property in Calumet City.
It does, but essentially what
it
we're...
It does. Okay, so you have a class action of Calumet City homeowners.
And
that would be perfectly feasible.
But all we have now, because our original complaint went into that, but then Cal City has amended the ordinance twice, and it's eliminated those aspects of the ordinance that tended to reduce value based on the possibility of taking...
You can't be arguing that this law burdens sales, makes it difficult to sell property, but doesn't lower property values.
No, I'm not saying that. It makes it impossible to close a transaction unless and until Cal City says it's okay.
What a burden on a person's right to sell his property. That reduces the value of the property.
We agree.
And therefore, your proposition has to be that house values in Calumet City have been harmed by this ordinance. If that's true, there could be a class action of homeowners complaining this ordinance has reduced the property. It's a deprivation of property without due process.
We understand that, Your Honor, but at this stage, what we're complaining about is the absolute deprivation of the right to sell without due process.
Yeah, and the person who's hurt primarily is the person who wants to sell his property and can't.
Well,
right? And he's hurt, and even before he wants to sell his property is worth less because there's this restraint on alienation. And so all the property owners can get together and complain. Their property values have been diminished by an unconstitutional ordinance.
Your
Honor,
perfectly
straightforward.
I don't disagree with any of that. It is straightforward, but the homeowner who wants to sell his property is damaged 100% because he can't realize a sale price. There's some additional element that even the sale price that he gets is lower, but just say he can't close the deal, he's deprived 100% of his sales price. The broker is deprived of somewhere between 1 and 6%. So the economic consequences and the injury are exactly the same. It's the order of magnitude. And what we have here is Cal City saying no property can be sold unless and until we say it can be. And there's a debate as to what rights of appeal there are, but there's no debate that there's absolutely no due process protection pre-deprivation of the right to transfer. And that is a constitutional violation. It's been well established. In the Connecticut versus Door, there was a attachment without any due process, without any opportunity to be heard, and the United States Supreme Court said many years ago that that is unconstitutional. So I think there's no question that what Cal City is doing here is unconstitutional because the homeowner has no redress. If the inspector says no, make repairs, you either must go along with it or you can't sell your house.
You can complain to the zoning board, apparently.
You cannot. This is an argument that was made and rejected below. The inspectional services part of the ordinance is in a unique part of the ordinance that says Department of Inspectional Services. It has nothing to do with zoning. This was before the trial court and it was rejected. It came up again in the reply brief after we pointed out again. But in any event, that's a post-deprivation remedy which would not save it anyway, that you can appeal. It's just like in the cases we cite in our brief. Pre-judgment garnishment, after your wages were garnished, you had a period of time to go in and try to get the garnishment lifted. There were pleven. Your TV or your sofa was taken without any opportunity notice to be heard. You had an appeal. You could go in. You could show you were in compliance with the sales contract. None of that mattered. This is a absolute pre-dep. There is no pre-deprivation.
I don't understand this argument. But
there's. It's very.
Because
here, Cal City stops the transfer, and you have no, and the homeowner has no opportunity to contest whether there's a code violation, whether the repair should be made, anything else. It's just halted and it's stopped. And the cases we cite in our brief on due process were similar situations in which the person whose property right was being affected had no opportunity to complain, only after the fact or by appeal. So I thank you. I see I've
gone
over my time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stahl. Mr. Murphy, do you have anything further?
Two quick footnotes and an observation. Judge Bauer, on two points that Your Honor raised, there is a base fee of $150 in the ordinance for the inspection. Judge Sykes and Judge Bauer, with respect to the statutory procedure for the Zoning Board of Appeals, the statute is couched in terms of the ZBA setting a hearing, reasonable time, reasonable place, but perhaps more importantly for Your Honor's concern, an appeal to the ZBA operates as an automatic stay. So that benefits that seller. Finally, on the merits, I would ask the court to remember that the ordinance allows somebody who's contemplating selling their property to go through this process. You don't have to wait until you actually have a contract. So the homeowner can say, you know, I'm getting ready to sell. Let me go to the city, see what the situation is with my property, and if there's any problems, I can resolve it before the, you know, before I actually have a hard contract, because the ordinance makes the inspection results good for 6 months. So that's in the law. And my observation in sitting listening to opposing counsel and the questions posed by Judge Posner is not simply the title company, not simply the sign company, but if these brokers are allowed to have standing, then we might as well wait for Mayflower Van Lines to come in, because they would have a contract with the seller to move the furniture and make their $4,000 or $5,000 from the seller, no different than the 6%. But if the sale is frustrated, then the moving company doesn't make their money. We do.
Never
not
mind the Teamsters Union coming in.
We're a strong union town. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you to both counsel.